This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the show. This is Jason Hartman, your host, and every 10th episode, we do something kind of special, kind of different. What we do is we go off topic. So regardless of which show it is on the Hartman Media Network, whether it be one of the financial shows, economics, real estate investing, travel, longevity, all of the other topics that we have, every 10th episode, we go off topic and we explore something of general interest, something of general life success value. And so many of our listeners around the world in 164 countries have absolutely loved our 10th episode shows. So that's what we're going to do today. And let's go ahead and get to our guest with a special 10th episode show. And of course, on the next episode, we'll be back to our regular programming. Here we go. It's my pleasure to welcome James Damore to the show. He is the author of the famous Google Memo. He is a nerd centrist interested in open discussions and improving the world by fixing perverse incentive structures. He's the author, again, of the pro-diversity Google Memo. James, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. It's good to have you on the show today. And you are coming to us from beautiful Mountain View, California. Is that correct?
Right.
Awesome. Awesome. Good stuff. You were famously terminated by Google, and they have this heavy political correctness structure there. And, you know, you wrote the Google Memo. First of all, give us a little background as to how this came about. And how long was the memo? Was it like 3 pages or how long was it?
I had been getting more involved in my team and improving teamwork on my team. And I noticed that some people just weren't speaking up as much during meetings and other little things like that. So I decided to go to these diversity and inclusion meetings. Mm-hmm. But I realized that they weren't so interested in making everyone feel included. And the diversity that they were looking for wasn't really viewpoint diversity. It was more just demographic diversity, mm-hmm. trying to match the numbers to the U.S. population. Mm-hmm. And they were really ignoring some psychological on average differences between men and women and how that might affect the workplace.
Right.
I felt like ignoring knowledge will never get us to the solution. And so I wrote this 10-page document, just clarifying all my thoughts on this and sent it to them. Mm-hmm. And they read it, but just ignored it. And this happened multiple times. I went to multiple of these programs. I talked to multiple people in HR and just throughout the women at Google program, unconscious bias program, and they just shut me down. And at some point, it found its way on an email list, and then it went viral within the company. Mm-hmm. Eventually, someone leaked it to the media, and there was so much outrage that Google ended up firing me a couple of days after that.
Well, you know, you can't tell the truth in today's world anymore because the truth is irrelevant. It's all like this sort of moral subjectivist kind of viewpoint. And if it doesn't comply with the PC culture, you're in trouble. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Give us a sense of the timeline. You went through that kind of chronological chain of events, but how much time passed in there? When did you start going to these diversity meetings? And then when did you write the memo? And I know it was 3 days after that that they let you go. Or it's not between when you wrote it. It's between when it was leaked to the media, right?
Right.
Give us a timeline there.
So I guess I had always been interested in psychology and evolution and just understanding the world in general. And especially when I was in grad school, I was really interested in that. And then I started seeing these diversity programs just throughout my 4 years at Google. But it was only within like May and June that I became more involved in them. And then I wrote this up in late June, early July, started sending it out to the program heads. And then it was at the end of July, beginning of August, that it went viral within the company. So there was about a month of it being just circulated between, you know, some people that I had talked to and not being viral at all and just having reasoned discussion to it becoming viral and people calling me a Nazi.
Unbelievable. These are supposed to be the tolerant people calling you a Nazi, right? They're not tolerant of any viewpoint but their own. And I've always found this interesting that there's this sort of like segment of the population, James, that talks about diversity. You alluded to this in the start of our conversation. They talk all about diversity. They wear it as though it's like this badge of honor. And they may have friends with different skin colors and so forth, but there's literally no diversity of thought whatsoever. These people all think the same. And if you don't comply with their thinking, you're out. And I mean, you are violently out sometimes. They will troll you on the internet. They will say disgusting things. They will accuse you of all sorts of stuff that's just completely irrelevant, not true. You know, it's just, it's insane. You know, John Stossel went on to college campuses and tried to talk about things, and he was just shouted down. I mean, you know, the places where free speech is supposed to be this marketplace of ideas, and nothing could be further from the truth. It's really incredible what we've come to, and it makes me very concerned about our future. That old quote, and gosh, forgive me, I can't, you know, remember who said it, but maybe it was like Voltaire or something, and he said, you know, I may disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. And we had better all believe that, because if that kind of idea goes away, we're all in trouble. Because anybody that has another viewpoint today, tomorrow they're coming for you. Okay, the pendulum swings back and forth throughout history. And, you know, in a year, 5 years, 10 years, you don't know how that pendulum is going to be swinging. And it might be you on the outs next time, right? So, it's a, you know, we better just view, you know, the way the founders of the country viewed it as just, we all have the freedom to speak. Very, very important thing. Tell us more about what your memo said. You know, give us a little insight into, you know, what was actually written there and what was found to be so offensive.
I guess I tried to start with just laying out how political bias can play a role in our thinking about these diversity issues. And so a common belief on the left is that all disparities in society are due to some sort of injustice or discrimination, while the right is much more tolerant of disparities and thinks that some of them are just natural and just. So if you come through the viewpoint that all disparities are due to discrimination, then when you look at Google and see that only 20% of the engineer jobs are filled by women, while there's 50% of women in the population, then you're automatically going to say, okay, there's some sexism there. And I would agree that, you know, there's likely some differential treatment of women, but that's not the whole story. And so I went into just some personality and interest differences between men and women and how that's affecting both their interest in technology and just how they interact in the workplace and how we can better accommodate women if we want to be more accommodating of the, for example, average female personality that is just more cooperative. And a common example is women often complain that they're not called upon in meetings and that they're talked over. And that's because the workplace is sort of male normative in that if you have a male manager, they will just expect everyone to speak up and maybe speak over each other and just compete for the best idea. While women more like environments where they actually are called upon and they acknowledge other people's contributions, which is just a very different way of working. And if you don't acknowledge that there's some difference there, and it's not that women are systematically spoken over, it's just that, you know, more assertive people are speaking over less assertive people, and that there's some personality differences there, then, you know, you're never going to solve the issue if you just blame everything on sexism.
And, you know, it's interesting that the sort of zeitgeist today is that the way that women are viewed versus the way men are viewed is that women are weak or disadvantaged in some way. But women have a lot of power that, you know, it's really sort of not exposed, power that sort of is generated from the feminine side. I see that on your website you have Dr. Warren Farrell's book, and I read that years ago, The Myth of Male Power, which is a fascinating look into some of the real important nuances of, you know, the gender pay gap and violence and chivalry and like every aspect of kind of male-female comparison. It's not weakness, it's differences. Why, maybe I'm not saying it right, but it surprises me, James, that our culture just can't come to terms with the idea of celebrating our differences versus trying to make us the same. I mean, we all have something to contribute. Men do, women do, people of different viewpoints, they all have something to contribute. As soon as we try and gloss over that and view everybody in the population as like this monolithic drones that are all the same when they're not, first of all, we're lying to ourselves, obviously, but I just think that's really bad for society.
Yeah, and I think part of it comes from, well, feminism largely only speaks from the female perspective, and the left often speaks in oppressor-victim narratives.
Yeah.
And you can't really hold a view that, you know, there are differences, but they're complementary, and, you know, it's not that one is better than the other if your only way of speaking about political issues is oppressor and victim.
Yes, that definitely couches and frames the whole debate the wrong way. Certainly if you look at just the, you know, the alleged pay gap, and I'm not saying there isn't a pay gap, but I don't know, you know, it's complicated and people ought to realize that, you know, it's a simple fact that men take more dangerous jobs that are dirty, dangerous, filled with injuries, they're lonely. Women don't take these jobs, and those jobs tend to pay better, you know, than an office job where you can come in and hang out with your friends and have coffee and, you know, have a nice, pleasant social environment and do office work. You know, being a trash collector is not that kind of job, and you're simply going to get paid more to do dirty, dangerous jobs that are dirty, dangerous, lonely jobs that people self-select for. There's no question there's a self-selection bias, and that exists. So, you know, thoughts?
Right. So within tech, it's really important to realize that one of the biggest personality differences that's affecting the gender gap is the differing interest in people versus things, or thought of another way as empathizing versus systemizing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Men tend to score higher on systemizing, which is, you know, trying to understand systems and try to understand the underlying rules of that system. And, you know, you can also see this in the overrepresentation of people on the autism spectrum within tech. And people that are high-functioning autistics, 90% of those are men.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a high correlation between, you know, systemizing type mindset and how much you enjoy tech.
Right. So that leads to the self-selection bias. I mean, I would venture to guess that more women gravitate toward human resources type positions, whereas more men gravitate to, you know, nerdy sort of systems type positions, like you mentioned. Oh, God forbid, I can't say men are nerdy. That would be an insult toward men, but no one cares. You know, no one cares if you insult men. You know, it's,
yeah.
Okay, tell us more. Anything more in the memo that's sort of like some highlights about it?
There were many aspects that the media just never covered or put under the brush. Like, you know, the whole fact that I had a whole page of suggestions for how we could actually address the gender gap without resorting to just giving preferential hiring to women over men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how we could actually just restructure the workplace and, for example, make part-time work actually work at Google. Because
mm-hmm.
that's one of the biggest things that in countries where part-time work is actually valued and seen as a legitimate option, 40% of women, for example, I think in the Netherlands, opt for part-time work, while only about 7% of men do.
Right, right. And that's another interesting point that you bring up, is that many women, a large share of women, leave the workforce for a certain number of years to raise children. And God knows society needs that, okay, obviously. And they get a closer bond with their children than a father will ever have because, you know, they're around them more. There's a physical element to that, obviously, too. And the courts rule in women's favor overwhelmingly when it comes to child custody and parental rights issues and in divorce cases and so forth. But, you know, literally, there, if you pay someone based on number of years experience, the amount of time in a position, which is, you know, the seniority concept is a valid thing, you know, women typically have less seniority because they'll leave for 3, 5, 7 years and or they'll be part-time. So it's just less hours in the position, right?
Right. And, you know, I think we really should stop measuring success based on male values of, you know, financial success. Because being
good point.
A mother and raising your kids, you know, that is a very valuable thing and also very fulfilling for many people.
Oh, absolutely. And let's not forget about stress-related diseases that now women are getting their share of, that they used to be the parlance of men. The men would always get the stress-related diseases and, of course, you know, die 8 years earlier, which we still do. Now, women are getting their share of them because they're dealing with a stressed out, they're slaves to the corporation, right?
I think, you know, so much of this is expecting women to act like men and then blaming society when they don't,
right?
Which really hurts women often, especially those that really just find comfort in, for example, a traditional female gender role.
Yeah. You know, I've done a fair amount of study on the subject of the women's movement and feminism, you know, back to the 60s. And it's hard to argue that that hasn't hurt women, that women are actually, in some ways, they're certainly better off now. But I don't know, you know, they're worse off in a lot of ways, too. I know a lot of women, especially above age 30, that would gladly trade their life of being stressed out, working all these hours, being slave to the corporatocracy, that would trade it for a more traditional life in a minute. But of course, you can't even say stuff like that anymore. It's it's a crazy world. It really is. It really is. So some of the points that you raise was, you know, demoralize diversity, stop alienating conservatives, confront Google's biases, stop restricting programs and classes to certain genders or races, have open and honest discussion about the costs and benefits of our diversity programs, focus on psychological safety, not just race or gender diversity, de-emphasize empathy when making policy decisions, prioritize intention, be open about science, the science of human nature, reconsider making unconscious biases training mandatory for promotional committees. Did I kind of sum that up? Is there anything else you want to mention in any of those?
That sums up a lot of my suggestions. And yeah, I think really just trying to understand other people's perspectives is the most important thing. And stop assuming everyone has the exact same perspective as you. Mm-hmm. And that would help solve a lot of the political issues and also some of these workplace inclusion issues where maybe the male manager just doesn't know that their female employee thinks a certain way. And, you know, another example is just women are more often will show emotion. So it's harder for men to be emotional and think straight at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually easier for women to do that. So, if someone is crying, they may actually be thinking like very rationally.
Mm-hmm.
But because men can't do that, they've been taught to suppress their emotions.
Right.
But it's perfectly fine when a woman does it because they can still think and it's healthier for them in some ways.
Yeah. Women have a better catharsis mechanism within their, you know, own ecosystem and their own biology. We as men carry around a lot of extra baggage because we don't have that. So they have a huge advantage in many ways. That's one of them. You know, also, I've noticed in the workplace, sometimes I just can't, like, overcome a problem with a vendor or another employee, but you bring a woman in and they can just smooth it over. They can just fix it. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Like, there's no way I could have bridged that gap, and I'll get a female to help me with it, and they just fix it. It's amazing. They're like the fixer, you know? It's they're just a wonderful, wonderful thing, but if we don't acknowledge the differences and if we don't celebrate them, we are going to all lose. Everybody loses. We need to understand we have differences and celebrate them and not try to hide them. The differences are there for a reason. We, you know, we complement each other, the sexes do. Yeah, it's just something else. You know, when you talk about the ideological echo chamber, that wouldn't be so terrifying if it weren't at a company like Google, a company that literally controls 65-ish percent of the entire planet's search traffic on the internet. That is a scary amount of power. You did a great video for PragerU, Dennis Prager's philanthropic endeavor, which is fantastic, by the way, PragerU.com, like you, like university. Dennis Prager is suing YouTube or Google or Alphabet. I'm not exactly sure which entity he's actually suing, but suing them because they are discriminating, literally, in search results. Well, that's the accusation by PragerU. I believe that's true. I believe Facebook does this. And no one knows because these algorithms are just a big secret. You know, the idea that Facebook, Google, and, you know, Twitter to a lesser extent can influence what we see and maybe more importantly, James, what we don't see by the way their algorithms work. And these algorithms are top secret. They should be open source, if you ask me. If Google, for example, Google and Facebook don't want to be busted up for antitrust, and it's not antitrust economically as much as it is in the marketplace of ideas, which is a new kind of antitrust we should be thinking about in the information age, then at the very least, the algorithms, the way search results are presented to people should be public. We should be able to know why we see what we see and why we don't see what we don't see. And in a company that it clearly has a bias and is clearly left-leaning, again, even if you are on the left and you agree with the left, you know, it's amazing how things can change in 5 or 10 years. This kind of power is, it's too concentrated for me, at least. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's a really tough issue. Part of where the bias comes from is just in the data that they collect. You know, for example, they may be labeling fake news and trying to remove fake news from the search results, but the only fake news that they find would be fake news that supported Trump or attacked Hillary and never any of the other stuff. And so they may just identify these conservative sites as fake news. So it doesn't even have to be very intentional. It'll just be from some bottom up, you know, invisible bias that they have that, oh, anything that was pro-Trump must have been fake news. So it's really unfortunate. It's really hard to open these things up because even the engineers don't fully understand a lot of these algorithms.
There's a fantastic TED video, TED, another left-leaning organization, that talks about the algorithms. And like you said, and you know, you were part of that at Google when it came to image search. And feel free to elaborate on what you did there if you like. But not even the engineers that design these things even know how they work because the way she explained it, the TED speaker, was like, well, you'll start with this thing that's, you know, maybe like looking at it like a spreadsheet with a few columns, and it's this if and or logic, right? But it extends to thousands and thousands of columns and thousands of rows. You know, I guess that's a way to picture it. That's probably not how it actually works, but it's a way that, you know, non-programmers can maybe visualize it, like myself. And when you do that, nobody even really knows how it works anymore. It literally is AI, right? It's taken on a mind of its own. You don't know why something shows one result versus another, do you?
Right. Yeah, a lot of it is just feeding sample data and then training neural nets to extract features from that and using those features to predict outputs like, is this porn, is it child safe, is it, you know, Nazi, all these random labels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting stuff. Well, listen, I wish you well. I want to thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today. And please give out your website and your Twitter handle as well, or anything else you want to share with people.
Yeah, so my Twitter handle is James A. DeMore. And the website that I have currently is just firedfortruth.com.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.